What I'm going to do now briefly is just review some of the risk factors that we've discussed this week, addressing youth. And of course, yesterday we talked about beginning with our own lives and some of the factors, some of the risk factors that we identified with as we were growing up, peer pressure, wanting to be recognized, needing to be recognized for who we were, and someone to kind of turn on that light inside of us. But being recognized is a real big one. But maybe you could help me by sharing some of the other risk factors that we brainstormed and discussed yesterday that face youth today. Just brainstorming. Anything that comes to mind that you recall from yesterday's discussion?
Drugs and alcohol,
self-destructive behavior.
Breakup of the family.
Racism. Racism. Thank you.
Need for good role models.
Need for good role models.
Especially the male role model.
Okay. Especially male role models. That's
establishing
relationships. Establishing relationships. Yes.
Idle time and unemployment.
Idle time, unemployment. Underemployment.
Okay. What does that mean? Why under and un?
People who are the working poor, people who are working for minimum wage, and it's not even enough to really live on.
Couldn't that also mean people who are trained, you know, maybe have a master's degree and trained for some specific thing but can't find a job in that, so they're working at... you know, some other maybe minimum wage jobs, but they're under what they were trained.
Right. We talked about that early in the week, the glass ceiling, where people buy into the promise that if you get an education, you should be able to match a job that's commensurate with that. And because of issues like racism and other factors, that people aren't able to break through that ceiling. Great. Of course, we know that there are also issues like abuse and neglect. There's so many issues that youth are facing today. Great. That's helpful. What are some of the possible solutions that we discussed this week to support youth and assist them?
Empowering them by giving them an opportunity to serve both ways.
Okay. Empowering, opportunity to serve. Not just seeing them through the stigma of being at risk, but seeing that they have something to offer. Great.
Peer support.
Peer support.
Creating one-on-one situations in a neutral territory.
Okay, one-on-one situations in a neutral territory.
That would be a place of belonging.
A place of belonging, positive place for belonging. Yeah. Mentoring, role models. Anything else? Okay. Can you give some?
Well, I'm thinking of school. You know, we can't offer school as we used to, and meet the needs of all the children because they come in thinking themselves failures, and have to find a place where they can succeed, no matter how small that is.
Great. So what are some of the supports for that? What are some of the supports for building on that success? I mean, what are resources? What are some of the supports that can be provided? For example, the church. That's one of the options that we discussed.
Their own families, which are not as supportive as they used to be.
So the family, they're... Right. And someone yesterday discussed that there are people in the family that may not be visibly seen as support. Maybe an uncle or, you know, pull some of the people back into the family.
Well, there's extended families now, and that's helpful in some instances.
Yes. How can the church be a support?
Well, we're offering youth
programs.
Okay. And youth leaders who...
I hear this thing of meeting them on their own turf kind of thing, but I draw draw a blank on what that can be.
Yeah, good. That's good that you draw a blank, but that you remember that. Thank you. Yes?
In kind of addressing what you said about leaving their own, on their own turf, for 3 years I worked for Young Life. And I don't know if they have Young Life in Portland or not, but Young Life is an international Christian outreach to high school kids, and now they've moved down to the area of junior high because they realize in high school it's oftentimes too late. The idea of reaching out, that their whole philosophy is that you go where kids are. So the guy who started it was told, he was an intern at a church, but he was told to go out on the street corners and the basketball courts and the drugstores where they hung out and just meet kids, get to know them, play basketball like your Saturday thing. And then after you, it was called to winning the right to be heard. And you don't win kids over and bring them into the church and into the faith until you've become their friend first. And that's the whole philosophy of Young Life, is you befriend the kid and then he trusts what you have to say, because otherwise, you know, why should he?
Right. So it's kind of real relationships with your kids.
Relationships first, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And again, I'm not going to do this workshop for you, so you guys, you know, you're the resource, right? I'm just facilitating here. So what are some resources like Young Life that can be or are involved in the community?
Well, through our church, it's been mentioned and nothing has happened yet, but I think it's maybe brewing, and that is some sort of a daycare situation for people who can't afford that, you know, I don't know, a sliding scale or something, that is a real need for that.
Thank you. That's definitely one that's often lifted up in our schools, is the need for daycare. Teen moms, you can't have a teen mom program without looking at daycare. So.
Our high school provides that. We call it choice. And a part of that is daycare, so it's a mom can go to school with the kid, and they also do parenting as a part of that.
Right.
My community is small, still fairly rural, and the social or community groups, Kiwanis, Elks, those groups still function with youth. Not just money-wise. I've learned a lot of things, like Elks gives, nationwide, Elks gives more scholarship money than anybody else other than the U.S. government. Rotary's involved in international student programs, et cetera, et cetera. But in small towns, the people are still dealing with the kids in the community. And so some of the programs you've done are in a community like mine, that would be a place to tap human resources of people who are still willing to do things like that.
Well, and I want to list some of those resources that maybe you see in your smaller community. But I wanted to acknowledge that what the kids need are resources like Young Life, like church youth groups, like boys clubs and girls clubs, that when it's not so far removed from the reality that we can imagine, and that the resources are very practical resources that these kids need. And it's because of what's happened in our urban environment, what's happened in our cities where we've lost that sense of community, that we lose perspective on how simple the problem is. You know, that it's a simple support network that these kids need. And I think it's really helpful for us to remember what those support networks are and to begin to imagine how we can put new ones in or bring the old ones back.
Would like the Big Brother, Big Sister program be something?
Excellent. Yes.
You know, I think another place that maybe in some cases we're missing the boat is by not maybe offering more parenting kinds of things, so that for young parents, that they have an opportunity to see some good models for parenting. So as their children get older, there can be a family, even if it's a single parent family, there are certain skills and techniques that a lot of people don't have, maybe because of the parenting that they had. And I think that is a really important place.
Yeah, I agree.
To reach our youth is through what parenting we can offer.
Excellent. Role modeling, making it practical. That's a lot of what we've been talking about this week, is that what is established in our school system because of these kids and their risk factors and it's, education doesn't seem practical for them. It doesn't seem like it's applicable to their life. And by bringing adults, bringing support systems in where kids can see it practically or experience it, that really helps for that to be something that they'll buy into. What I like to do now is just list some of the programs that we do through this church ministry, the peer support system. And then I have a couple of exercises that I want us to go through after that. To begin with, we have the Saturday gym that someone has mentioned. On Saturdays, we sponsor a Saturday gym in a local high school. It's Jefferson High School. It's the only inner city school in Oregon. And on Saturdays, we sponsor that program, and it involves 100 to 200 African-American males. What's one of the things that's really beneficial about that is those are the most at-risk youth in Portland. That's the highest at-risk factors. Those youth come for about 4 hours on Saturday to go through that process. And I don't want to give you too much information on that.
Are they the only ones invited, or, I mean, is it strictly black youth, or is it the community, or?
It's basically strictly black youth, and that's not based on exclusion, that's based on culture. I'm glad you asked that, because that gives me an opportunity to tell a story. I used to go to the Salvation Army, and it was a time for me to, for my own recreation. And when I went there, I got into a basketball game. And in that basketball game, there were several youth there who were on the state championship basketball team. And so I played a basketball game with them and just barely survived. And so one of the kids who had lost that game came up to me and said, are you tired? You want me to take your place? And I felt like he's kind of pushing me off the court. And I put up my strongest bravado and said, no, I can handle this. And just because I didn't want to feel pushed off. And the point about that is that that's really a cultural identity for these kids. In a place, in a society, they can't get that cultural reinforcement from employment. Unemployment is 50% for African-American males, youth. There's just so little, there's so few places where they can really say that I'm important, you know, I'm Superman or whatever. And so the other part of that story is the power to me, is that on that following Saturday, I went to the Saturday gym that we sponsor, and I happened to have my collar on. And here's this 7-foot basketball player that walks up and sees me with my collar on. And he goes from this macho position to running to his peers and saying, hey, Joe, man, he's a minister. And just that sense of identity, you know, and how that broke through the stereotypes, to see this old man that was trying to play basketball with him, to that identity and relationship of the church. It's a wonderful experience and the power of that program. But another point that's really critical for me in this is that in walking into the Saturday gym and seeing so many African-American male youth and their music going as they're playing, and the intimidation for me as an African-American male, and that it's a real clear message that that's their culture and their place. And what a wonderful opportunity to be there and be present. You know, I can't go in, I can't dominate, I can't use my power position that I'm an adult and you're the children, and to just have to sit there and be with them, and that they're in the position of power. And it's a wonderful thing to turn that around and have them minister to me. I can't say enough of how wonderful that is.
Another question I had about that was, are there supervisors there so they monitor the game?
Yes. Yeah, and the supervisors are African-American males, and they have the credibility that these are people who have put their time in and been there for the kids, and they're constantly teaching the kids. They're the mentors for these kids. And you'll be, there'll be more about that. So I'm sorry to get so caught up on that.
Did you have a hard time getting the group to start?
No, not at all.
No?
No.
Just opened the doors and they came?
Right. It's responding to their need, responding to their cultural identity. And so much of what we do, a bottom line of this, is it's all culture. I should have also said, and all of the programs that we develop, it's with the basic belief that youth need their own culture. That's what our church has recognized all along, is that youth need their own culture. Our youth group is an acknowledgement of that, that adolescence, being a teenager, is a time of a separation, a different cultural identity that's antisocial in a healthy way, that it's a time when youths begin to experiment and take some independence into seeing themselves as little adults, if you will, that it's a time of transition. And it's important for the church and for our society to guide them in a positive way toward that independence and productive adulthood. That's a basic bottom line of all of the programs that we have established.
If maybe I'm getting ahead of you, and if I am, I'm willing to wait, but are there programs for girls?
Yes, yes. One that I will list is we have a female support group that my wife is she's leading that. And we have about 10 females who are volunteers and are offering themselves as role models and providing support to females. That's just one of them. The Etiquette Program, where we take youth out to the Western Culinary Institute, that's open. That's no gender barrier. Yes. That's one of them. The other one that I spoke about yesterday is in August, where Wolf's Restaurant, a 5-star restaurant, the owner of that restaurant has invited us to bring 25 youth in, and she will train them on Saturday as waiters and waitresses, and then on that following Sunday, they will be able to bring their parents in and serve dinner to their parents in a 5-star restaurant. And it's a real empowerment for those kids. On the Saturday, there's a lot of skills that will be taught through that, waiter and waitressing, listening, communication, etiquette. But then on that Sunday, to be able to use that in a practical way and to be able to give something back to their grandmother, to their parents who have little resources. But that empowerment and relationship establishment is something I'm really excited about. Yes, please, Dave.
Same thing, but I'm throwing you off track.
No.
A little different question. Given that we as a church are primarily upper middle class, Caucasian, advantaged kids, when I as a pastor look at our own youth ministries, or I talk to other pastors about their youth ministries, the thing I hear again and again is, gee, the kids are too busy. They're in sports, they're in all these things that with the advantaged kids are sort of interrupting the things we'd like to do in the church, which used to be one of the only options. Obviously, we're not targeting the kids who don't have anything to do or don't have. How do you get over that hump? I mean, how do you redirect a youth ministry? I sometimes like to say to our kids, hey, look, come to worship with your families, that's great, and then go do your thing. I mean, why should we waste time doing pizza parties you're doing in school or 4-H or whatever?
Yeah.
How do we redirect our energies?
I don't have all the answer to that, and hopefully we'll get to some of that. But just to respond to that now, I think that we have to look at some transition time, as you've kind of mentioned in your statement. That I think that if we empower our youth to not only see themselves as a youth group that are receiving from the congregation, but as missionaries of the church or sharing in the mission of the church, that have the youth be peer counselors in their school, but bring some of those kids into your youth group. We have the same struggle at our congregation in Augustana. Our kids are very busy, and our focus is very much on raising money for our youth to go on a project and whatnot. And so it's really hard, because even in our congregation, there's little relationship between this program and those youth and our congregation. But when our youth go into the school, they really share in the mission of this project and of the church, because they're listening to other kids. They're responding. I don't know how to say this, but racism is maybe less of a factor with our kids than if they weren't involved in this program, if they didn't have that relationship. But I mean, there's a lot to that. Yes, please, Paul.
I'm sitting here wondering if we, if I'm asking this question and also kind of making an observation. A different look at what the church is. We've done a a nice job of funding, and I'm just talking strictly dollars now, funding the church, this building and its programs, and people that come to it can participate, and we can participate without any discrimination. But the church doesn't reach out really where it probably belongs. So is your program funded?
No.
Okay, well, that's exactly what I mean then. The church's idea, this is what we will fund, and then the church's real work is really kind of ethnocentric and historical and traditional and caught within these boundaries that it's been in for decades, centuries.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking of that as I heard what your question was. What are we doing to, in a way it comes under, to re-institutionalize the direction of our money? In a way, what you're doing comes under evangelism. Can we put money in that way? Is that being addressed at all in the bureaucracy of the church?
I don't know. I'm not in the bureaucracy of the church. But I do see it as a critical issue, because our churches are in communities that are falling apart.
Right.
And if they're not falling apart yet, that's going to happen. And I think that it is a critical issue that we will have to address at some point, and it's better to do it sooner than later. To follow up what you're saying, it drives me crazy. This is a successful program, and I don't understand why it's having the struggles that it is having, but I do understand that there are struggles within the church financially. But this is a successful program, and maybe it does take some time to alter the way that the church is used to functioning. I don't know how to say it. I don't want to put hot water on anybody, especially myself.
Well, because I'm really out of touch with this, but what is the youth of the church doing? I mean, there are youth programs in the church. I mean, what are those programs doing? I assume that there's money going to that. Are those programs strictly now for international stuff? What I'm asking is, what are those programs doing that are established and that people are getting money for? Where are they and what are they doing?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what those programs are. I know that, first of all, the Lutheran Church has a strong history for youth group and supporting our youth. And I know that there are strong youth groups, and they're going to reservations, and they're going to Mexico. And so some of our stronger youth groups are really doing things. Part of the problem is that there aren't a lot of programs like this. And so maybe part of it is visibility and making the connection. I don't know, you're asking me questions that I'd be more comfortable answering in a one-on-one because I haven't thought all this through. But it's clear that, in my opinion, this is a successful program. Our church has a strong history for having strong youth groups. But I think that's been an internal kind of process. Yes, Paul.
The reason I ask that question is that in the formation of the new church, we've made all these really wonderful declarations about multicultural, and we've settled, we haven't put our money where our mouth is at all, have we? And I guess I ask that question then is, where does that get started? Is it the bishops? Is it just a member of the congregation to kind of give impetus to that? We've got an opportunity now here to make a Lutheran church in Portland be what we say the church is supposed to be, and yet you don't have any money.
Right.
That doesn't add up to me. And then I'll shut up.
Yeah.
I think some of us have been so frustrated in that we give our Christian mission elsewhere. We don't do it in the organized church because it's so frustrating to try to get anything started and to get anybody to follow it, to get anybody to give money to it. And so we've said, hey, I can be a Christian wherever I am. And so we go out and do whatever we have to do elsewhere. I think that's a real criticism that the bureaucracy that the church is needs to deal with, and I think you're absolutely right. But I also think that there's nothing wrong with us being the beast that goes out and nobody knows who we are. But then they find out, and, that's another thing that's been always been happening. But I feel the same frustration that you're stating. Here we go through this giant merge, another merge. That's how I felt about it and still feel about it. Why? For what? If it isn't going to really change anything. And as far as the small little community, don't tell me there aren't people there that are hurting, that need those youth to connect with them, and that those youth need to connect with for their own well-being. Those relationships have got to be formed. And our whole world has changed. It's not just, I mean, I don't think we can go too far with the things that Kelly's talking about. We need to do that. But we have a lot of people who were never poor before, who are poor now. We have a lot of people who've never known that they were not going to have a pension when they turn 40. They don't have a pension anymore. They don't have a job anymore. 4,000 people in one industry are laid off in a week. And we don't even, those of us who still are comfortable, don't want to hear it, and we don't pay attention to it.
That's what I'm asking. I'm not saying those kids aren't there.
Yeah.
And part of your question, too, is what our established youth mission programs are doing. And it's nice to think of them in a period of transition. I hope that's true. That's a very kind way to look at it. But what they do is take the strong leadership kids already and give them other experiences in leadership. And there is an emphasis in the, you know, only the Oregon youth group towards multiracial and multicultural race and mix. But our programs are designed for advantaged kids to get more advantage, or else to have some service opportunities for disadvantaged kids. But there's not a mixing of leadership and program ideas and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
The illustration of that is what kids get to come to hold, you know, do your kids get to come to hold the village?
Not yet.
Unless the church, you'll do it out of your own pluck and guts, but unless the church can provide a scholarship type stuff and again, put their money in the mountains.
I'm thinking about you personally, Kelly. Is the what your role is in your church and the program is Augustana? Is that right? Is that church paying your salary and helping you to do this ministry, or is this ministry that you're doing separate from?
Oh boy, you guys are tough.
If we can support people like yourself who can do this kind of, not everybody can do what you're doing. But if we can as a church help to support people like yourself who are doing this ministry, then we are doing the ministry.
Right. I totally agree. You know, one of the tough things in doing this week is looking at how I'm a target of everything that I've been presenting. I mean, the glass ceiling as a pastor, I've hit that. I mean, the calls for me are very limited because of racism. And that's a reality. Let's call it a reality. The funding of this program is a target because our focus is on the maintenance of our churches. And so a successful ministry that isn't looking at people who are going to necessarily be baptized or necessarily give. I mean, that's not going to be a priority for our resources. It isn't a priority for our resources. The bottom line is that if the church is serious about the gospel, and I am, then I have to live in the hope that that connection is going to. The support system since that has been very, very weak. And at the same time, in contrast, the community has just eaten this program up. I mean, it's a tremendous witness for our church and to our church, the response not only of the schools and the community, but what happens when you go out to congregations to present what's being done, just like here. But the reality is the support system, the commitment of the church is a different reality. And as a pastor, I guess my ministry is also ministering to the church. But, you know, I do need that, you know, something's going to have to happen. But everything that we've talked about as far as the parents of our youth, I've gone through the same thing. My wife has gone through the same thing in education and having a doctorate but not being in a position that's commensurate with that. So it's a real reality that we face. But unless you have any more tough questions, I mean, what I want to do now is, and I've gone through, I've listed some of the programs, and what I want to do now is break you up into groups of five. And you're going to follow through with exactly what you've been doing, and you're going to do some of the problem solving in groups of five. So if you break up into groups of fives, I'm going to give you a category, and you're going to be the brains, the management behind that, using your vocational background as students, teachers, analysts,
wives,
every whatever it is. So I want you to get in groups of five. You're going to get 5 minutes to do some brainstorming, and then you're going to report it.
Who's Edwards figure? Are they getting started on it? And somehow they got connected with one of the radio stations for a fundraiser. And that really was successful. It was, I don't know, they said they raised $20,000 in this one weekend for that program, because it went out over the radio asking for pledges.
Yes, sir.
Well, I think what you have to do is you have to bring to your church or the people in the area what this program is doing for the youth. If you could get some concrete examples. Mm-hmm. And we have a program in Chicago in our area called the Night Ministry. And the ministers talk to some of these troubled youth. We have volunteers in our church to take in some of these kids. They may be drug addicts, alcoholics. And after a period of time, the parents report back to the congregation. Sometimes it's success, sometimes it's a failure. And then sometimes we'll have the youth themselves will come in and say they've got a job and you know, so things will turn around. I think that's what would spark people to do something, if they get some concrete examples of how the program is helping the youth.
Great.
I think if you would find one person who would be a volunteer coordinator, it would be very helpful. Let him do some of your work. Let him do some of your work.
Great. Okay.
You are. You're in the front row.
We have the area people.
Yeah.
We have the area of publicity, and we're going to add the radio.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know we talked about that, no. But of course, we mentioned newspaper and maybe being invited to a bishop's convocation or forum where the bishops are together and make sure the idea is planted there. And maybe within the church, I know we eventually ended up at the newspaper, but.
What I had suggested was to send a letter, a questionnaire type of letter, to each church that you know in the area with some leading questions. Do you know about the program at Augustana Church? Have you heard of it? Do you think it is good? Would you be willing to support it? All kinds of leading questions, and then someone answered the letter with the answers they think that the congregation would come up with. Put it on the bulletin board, have it announced, and say, we got the letter from Augustana Church, and we have answered it, but we haven't sent it in. Here is our answer. It's on the bulletin board. Please read it. Please comment. And see what it brings.
Yeah, that's really good. Practical.
Tell the newspaper you want an ad, but you don't have any money. This is small. Okay. And we'll just talk about the need of having publicity and how it needs to expand beyond your program into other areas. And so we want the word to spread across the country to know that these are other things that can be done. So we want to publicize it more than just locally, but throughout the church.
Announcements,
yeah,
the local kids.
Right. I mentioned this within the school, being sure to announce the specific programs that you have, and maybe they'll be continued in other schools as well.
And other churches.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Thank you.
Fundraising?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, we have fundraising, and we decided that before we can get funded, we need to decide what exactly we wanted in our program, and then talking to the congregation and seeing who could donate, who wants to accompany, that could sponsor us.
Who the different people in our congregation are that belong to specifically active service clubs that might be willing to bring out in the community.
Lutheran Brotherhood.
Mission, yeah, Lutheran Brotherhood and AAL that have matching funds.
We wanted to be careful that we didn't take it from our own congregation's offerings and therefore make our congregation unhappy. We thought that after we had clearly defined it, we needed to educate our congregation and ask for their sponsorship and then take it out too. But that we wanted to use the people in our congregation to really be the funders. That they would do that by their own skilled connections in whatever business they're in, whatever service sponsor.
So what you're saying is to kind of leave it in the congregation's hands as far as using more individuals to follow up on the fundraising.
Well, to be a little bit more creative about fundraising than we generally are. Mm-hmm. I think that's what
we need to know. I can give you a little lead on a little bit of fundraising. I belong to a member of Lutheran Brotherhood, one of the branches. And every branch, Lutheran Brotherhood Insurance Company, has money available for all kinds of projects. There are a couple of criteria, however, and is that they're not just going to give it to you. You know, it's not like going to the bank and say, you got the money, give it to me, I got a gun. It just doesn't work that way. But really, the way it works is that you write a request. And you have a program, and you say, we're having a fundraiser, and we want to raise $1,000. Would you match us dollar for dollar, or two for one? And if they got enough money, they might go two for one. And we're going to have it at such and such a date, and it will be here, and it will be there, and however you're going to do it, with enough lead time, so it can come up at a meeting, and then they will get this thing lined up. And when you raise the money and you show them that you got the money, then they will match your money one for one or two for one. And this works. We have given out a lot of money. There are other things that you could use too. There are other programs. They have programs like Share program, which is food, but you got an athletic program.
Okay? Right. Okay. I'd like to follow up on that, but I'm concerned with time that we get all the groups out. And perhaps we can talk. That would be helpful.
We didn't really say is that the group said we should treat this as if we were doing a grant writing. And we should, you know, be that prepared before we go to our congregation, and after our congregation has said yes, then we need to be that prepared when we go to our community.
Okay.
Well, we accountability, and we spent a lot of time trying to figure out what it was too, because Kelly said something about the peer ministry accountability, but the process of thought that I caught was that first of all, we saw accountability as a process having to do with goals and what you're trying to achieve, but we immediately separated it from success at that. So if somebody's supposed to dig a hole in an hour, there better be a hole, but if you're supposed to work with kids, how they respond to your time with them is not the point. And you're not accountable for how they respond, but that you spend time with them. So accountability is a process, and with respect to people, we very much agree that it just requires time after the event to sit down with the kids or the leaders to say what happened and how, and some debriefing time. Another point that I guess I raised that I thought was interesting is that accountability applies not only that those who are given jobs attend them, but those those who set the goals in the first place take responsibility for them being seen through. And wondering if Augustana Church, I know nothing about, or whoever has sent you out, is really holding up their end of accountability. Is what they want success, or do they want to be sure that the ministry they're about, which would require some money support too, is really happening. So I don't know how the rest of the world, but in terms of the process you're doing, the who's dropping the weight here of accountability is not the kids in peer ministry or the volunteers, but the upper end of saying, yes, we are responsible for this ministry, whether or not it's producing kids in the pew. That makes sense.
That, it does. It's all very helpful. Our time is up. Again, I appreciate your passion, your energy, and your commitment, and being here. And I guess to just recap this is just again to walk from here with the knowledge that we have incredible resources within our church, and each of you represent that resource. So peer ministry, whether it's happening in Portland or in your local community, you can make it happen. Every program that we've talked about in peer ministry, you're perfectly capable of not only doing in your community, but as has been stated, there are needs. So thank you very much.
Thank you.